This is Lauren Fire with InspiringMama.com, and you're listening to Melitza with Raising Playful Tots.
Hi, I want to welcome you to Raising Playful Tots. My name's Melitza. I hope this show is a place where mothers like you can safely explore a slower, simpler, and playful lifestyle so that you can get to the heart of what your family needs to thrive, both now and in the years to come. Today I'm talking to Laura Fire from Inspiring Mama, and we're talking about a tender subject, finding joy and happiness in the midst of motherhood. I'm excited to share this episode as Lauren really highlights a different angle on happiness. I'm sure you'll have lots of nod your head moments throughout this interview, and remember to share it with your friends and tell Lauren. Stay tuned for a good old catch up after the interview and a simple summer idea for the kids and our sanity in July.
Today I'm talking to Lauren Fire, inspirational speaker, researcher, mother, and the founder of Inspiring Mama. Welcome to the show, Lauren.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. And today we're talking about finding joy and happiness in the midst of motherhood. So what is the big deal about choosing happiness? There's lots of people are talking about happiness at the moment, and I really wanted to kind of get to the heart of what is that big deal that we should be happy?
The way that I see it is a lot of us feel like happiness is tied to something. Maybe it's success. So when I get that house, when I finally get that job, when my daughter is finally old enough to talk or walk, or that we feel like there's something that we need to get, and then we'll get happy. And what people are realizing, and this is happening sort of all across the board, there's been a ton of research into happiness, into neuroscience, into, you know, how people, there's surveys and all sorts of people are learning that happiness and success actually aren't tied together at all. And when you think about it, it makes logical sense, because the people that are the most successful in life, you know, your celebrities, your people that are really wealthy, are they really the most happy? But when you compare them with sort of your everyday people, and especially when you look at survey results, they found that the happiest people actually aren't the most successful, aren't the most wealthy, aren't even close. And so what we're learning and what I teach my audience is that happiness is actually something you do. It's an exercise that you do in your life as it is right now. And it's not something you're going to achieve. It's not going to knock on your door one day and say, oh, you got that job. Here I am. It's happiness. Yay. You know,
yes, yeah.
You work at it. And it's not as hard as we thought it was. Happiness is really about what you're doing with, it can be your breath. It can be the way you move your body, what you say to yourself. Your thoughts play a huge role in how you feel on a regular basis. And when you can actually make a conscious effort, and you become conscious and deliberate about what you're doing on a moment-to-moment basis and how you're going through your day, you can change whether or not you're happy and how you feel and how emotional, your emotional stability or the ups and downs. You have a much powerful effect on that than you might have thought in the past. So that's what we're learning. And so what I try to teach is, here's some things you can do, little, I call them happiness practices, that you can do in the moment, whether you're, you know, cooking in the morning or playing with your kids or driving to work, little things you can do that can shift how you feel in the moment, that can actually have you feeling happier without changing anything else in your life.
So these practices are really to do with us as women and parents at home and mothers. It's not necessarily to do with our children to start with. What we're talking about today, we're going to be really focusing on the self-care and making sure that it's we're seeking happiness from the beginning of our day. So how do you choose to have happiness from the very start of your day? What would be some things that you might do?
Well, happiness is really about, for me, is I struggle a lot with very highly critical thoughts.
Okay.
So the first thing that I start to look at when I wake up in the morning is there's a natural tendency, if I'm on my normal autopilot, not paying attention to what's happening in my brain, critical thoughts of what I didn't get done yesterday, you know, you're not going to be able to get that done today because there's, you know, your calendar's packed. And so the first thing I try to do is really take the wheel back in my brain and notice, you know, are there critical thoughts? if there are, I stop them. And I've talked about this in my podcast as well. I call it a pause button. And if I notice a critical thought, I notice that I'm – sometimes it's not even that you notice the thought. You'll notice a feeling of guilt or shame or some kind of just a yucky something you don't – a feeling you don't like that is caused by yourself usually. It's – you know, if your husband yells at you first thing in the morning, that's different. But if you wake up and there's nothing else going on and you feel yucky, guilty, ashamed, frustrated, overwhelmed, there's probably something going on in your mind and something – some kind of thoughts that are running – that you're not noticing. I notice that, I'll really take a pause, you know, pause. You know, sometimes I even like, I'm putting my hand out, you can't see me, but okay. I'm putting my hand out, like, stop. Stop those thoughts. You don't have to follow them. And then I'll try to replace them with some positive thoughts. You're doing a good job. Yes, I can do this today. You know what? No, I'm not going to go down that train. I'm not going to criticize myself there. You know what? I'm going to have a good day today. Today's going to be a good day. And even if it doesn't feel real, because sometimes when you try to just replace negative thoughts with positive, they feel a little bit weird. But honestly, all of them are fake. None of them are real. So pick the ones that are going to empower you. None of the thoughts in your brain are real. You know, so if they feel odd at first, then you just got to keep doing it. And eventually they're going to start leading you down a path of creating the day that you want. So the first thing I do is really to try to replace the negative thoughts with the positive and try to look at my day with, you know, what do I want to happen? How do I want to be today? How do I want to feel today? And you can do this as you're brushing your teeth or taking a shower. Or, well, as moms, we don't usually shower in the morning, but I used to. Yeah. But as I'm, you know, getting dressed and getting the milk out of the fridge, and I'm kind of thinking like, well, how do I want my day to go? How do I want to feel? Not necessarily what do I want to get done? This is not your to-do list. This is really like, I've heard it called a to-be list. You know, how do I want to be today? And when you can project forward what you want out of your day, that's going to help you make decisions along the way in that direction. Whereas if you're just on autopilot, just like, get the milk, you know, doing your thing. And I call it autopilot because that seems the most, it's like there's the car's driving and no one's at the wheel, which is kind of how we are most of the time. Then your day is just going to go at a whim of, you know, what happens in your thoughts and whether or not it's cloudy outside or what's on the news, or, you know, you got to take the wheel back. And I think that really starts with, what do I want to happen today?
That's really good. I loved what you said about not a to-do list, but a to-be list, because we as women have to-do lists coming out of the wazoo. I mean, we have so many things that we want to get done. And even listening to the show, people might be thinking, oh no, look, another thing that I have to do. But that's not at all what you seem to be talking about. You seem to be sharing that we can, if we don't decide what we're going to be, then we're at the whim of whatever comes along. And we know that tantrums and all sorts of bugs and everything into our system comes along and can derail us. So I love that thought of being thinking that we've got to think of what we want to be and keep kind of giving ourselves a pep talk in the morning so that we can go along the right path. That's really cool.
And as women, I love, especially moms, continuing to tell ourselves, you're doing a good job.
Yes.
Just over and over again, because it's so easy to start feeling like I'm a bad mom because I didn't get the dishes done. And, oh, my daughter's not understanding the word no. I must be doing something wrong. You know, whatever it is, I stop again, the pause. You're doing a good job.
Yeah, that's really cool. I was just talking about tantrums and stressful situations. I know that you have some tools that you can help us with. How do you remain calm or become calm? Because sometimes it is a bit late when you're in a stressful situation as a parent. So maybe, you know, your toddler is thrown down at the supermarket. I think we can all testify to an experience where that's happened. Either they've thrown themselves on the ground or they are going for it because they really want something that they can't have. How do you remain calm under that type of pressure?
The first thing is to ground yourself. And when situations get stressful, and this works whether your toddler's throwing a tantrum or you walk into your boss's office and your boss is throwing a tantrum. It's the same process that the first thing you got to do is go to your body. Because when you are overwhelmed, when you are stressed, your brain might be on overdrive and all sorts of thoughts and all sorts of things that aren't true. You know, this is my fault, or I haven't, whatever. Do not follow those thought trains. Don't try to talk yourself down in your brain. Just go to your body. So number one is to ground yourself. It's feeling your feet on the ground and bringing your breath down into your stomach. So we call it diaphragmatic breathing, and it can happen in a split second. Just move your breath down into your belly. So if you breathe right now, put your hand on your belly.
Okay.
And bring your breath down into your belly so that when you breathe, that hand moves in and out.
Okay.
So that type of breathing is called diaphragmatic breathing, and that actually activates what's called your parasympathetic nervous system, which is the one that calms your body down. And this is science. This has been proven across the board. You have two different nervous systems. And when you're breathing shallowly, when you're tensing your chest, raising your shoulders, that's telling your body it's time to be in fight or flight. It's time to be stressed, time to be upset. Whereas if you can just bring your breath down into your belly and just feel your feet on the ground, those two things alone are going to calm your body down so you can think more clearly. Because when your body is reacting to the stress and you drop your shoulders back, kind of bring your chest up a little bit, and just really try to, like, you know, I'm a warrior, I'm calm, I'm in my body, I can do this. You know, I think that's number one, is really to keep your body grounded and to calm your system down, because then you can think clearly. If your body's stressed, and I still teach a course to bar exam students on how to calm themselves when they panic.
Okay.
And how to deal with the mental challenges and anxieties of taking a humongous test. And the first thing I tell them is, look, you have to calm your body down, because when your body's not calm, your brain literally, if it thinks you're on fight or flight, is going to shut off your ability to think clearly.
Yeah.
Because you don't need your ability to think clearly. You're running from a tiger. You know, that's what your body thinks. And so if you continue to get yourself all panicked, you're not going to be able to make the decision that you want to make in that moment.
Right.
So if you want to respond to your kid throwing a tantrum in whatever way you want to respond, in order to make that choice and not react, you need to have a calm body. So it's very simple. Feet on the ground, bring your breath into your stomach, and really just picture yourself like this nice, solid warrior that's ready to make a calm decision.
Oh, that sounds really good to be able to do that. I must remember to do that. It was really, every time as you were speaking, I was, you know, doing the breath, and I just felt calmer myself just doing the breathing in and out.
The breathing makes a very big difference, and you practice it. It's something to practice on a regular basis, because no matter what's happening, if you're feeling stressed or overwhelmed, bring your breath to your belly. It's going to calm your system down. It's science.
Yes. I mean, I've looked at some of the practices in conscious discipline, and one of the things it says, you know, smile, take a deep breath, and relax is one of the core parts of calming children down that they teach. And I see the difference in the kids when they're really stressed and you remind them, remember, you need to smile, take a deep breath and relax. And we do it too when they've done something that you need to talk to them about. Mm-hmm. And before the thoughts come out that you would want to control, you could smile, take a deep breath and relax yourself. Then the thoughts that come out are a little better. So I like that you can do that in many different situations and it will work. Cool.
Yes.
So what happiness practices would you encourage when you are a sleep deprived mum?
So I did actually a whole podcast about sleep deprivation, and I had on a friend of mine who's an energy expert, and he's a Qigong teacher. And so what he taught us, a couple of kind of interesting practices. Let me see if I can remember a couple of them. So sleep deprivation, one of the biggest things I have learned about tiredness is it can play a big part. It can be affected by our breath, how we're breathing, our posture, how we're standing. So if you're, it makes logical sense too, because if you're kind of humped over and you're, which is how we are when we're tired, you know, you kind of want to, you want to be that character of the tired mom. So he's like kind of humped over with your coffee and, oh, I'm too tired. And that's totally, it's fine, but you're depriving your body of some oxygen. So when you can stand up straight, and he taught me this, because the first thing I said is, oh, but you're tired. You don't want to stand up straight. He said, No, you know, if you stand up straight, you're going to bring more oxygen, and more oxygen is going to allow you to feel better.
Okay.
So first I would look at your posture, and that's also just going to help you feel a little bit better. Because when we stand up straight, we just feel a little bit happier. So I think that's a big one is your posture and how much water you're drinking. I think go and drink a big glass of water when you're tired. The first thing, just pound. And he says to drink room temperature water, not cold water, because cold water is going to have your body use more energy to heat it up.
Okay.
So he says to drink room temperature water, which I didn't know that either, right?
Oh, yeah. But,
yeah, that was interesting. So his name's Alan Ting. He's the one that did my interview. But so drink some room temperature water. And, you know, when I'm tired, I try to not continue to tell myself that I'm tired.
Okay.
Because it's, I get caught in the movie of my mind of the tired mama.
Right.
And like, yes, you're tired and you're not going to be able to talk yourself out of it, but continuing to remind yourself of how tired you are and how crappy you feel and is not going to help. So continue. I just try to continue to tell myself, you know what, you're doing a good job. You can do this. You can make it through this day. I can do this, you know, and give your, you know, drink more water, stand up straight, take some really nice deep breaths regularly. That's going to help bring more oxygen into your body. So when I say happiness practices, a lot of them are body, because I come back to the body a ton, because a lot of us think that we need to talk ourselves into feeling happier, when a lot of it, we can change the way we feel by changing our body. So the reason I'm talking about body is that, because a lot of us don't understand the power that our body really has over how we feel.
Right. And so if we are controlling our body a little better when we're feeling sleep deprived, then other things will follow. Mm-hmm. Other happiness practices can follow after that, I'm assuming.
Yes. So if you always start with the body when you have an emotion that you don't like that you're feeling. Bring yourself into your body. Become aware of what's happening in your body. And you may not like what you find. You may realize as you become aware and turn your attention into your body that your chest is really tight and it hurts. Or, you know, your stomach hurts or something like that. So you need to, but bringing your attention to your body is going to bring your attention out of your head. Because it's hard to have your full awareness on both. So when you bring your attention out of your head into your body, now you can move, you can shift. And I tell people, like, if you're feeling crappy, overwhelmed, turn on some music for 5 minutes and dance around.
Right.
Movement is going to change how you feel. We talk so much about the mind-body connection, which that alone, the fact that we ever thought they were separate yeah. is kind of crazy when you think about it, because yeah. they're attached, right?
Yes.
But we talk a lot about how our thoughts can influence our body. You know, our being emotionally upset or stressed can give you stomach problems, et cetera. We all kind of accept that. But what I think the next wave that's coming that people are teaching and that I think is going to become more widely accepted is how much your body and changing your body can impact your thoughts and your emotions. And the body is the easiest to change. You know, it's hard to change your thoughts. It's hard to change your thinking. It really is, because it's very ingrained and wired. But it's easier to say, you know, I'm going to move right now. I'm going to stand up straight. I'm going to breathe a little deeper. I'm going to jump up and down. I'm going to stomp around the room. And one of the practices that I teach when you're feeling like you need to ground yourself, if you're feeling just like scattered, is to stomp around the room like a toddler.
Yeah.
Because this is I study Qigong as well. And this is a Qigong practice, is just stomping your feet is going to bring up this grounding energy where, you know, brings up this energy of the earth, and it's going to help you feel more grounded. So whether or not you believe in the energy systems and all of this, it's going to help you feel better, because
yes.
you're going to take your focus off your brain. It's fun. You're going to have a little bit of fun for a few minutes, you know, stomp your feet and move your arms back and forth like a toddler and get out that whatever it is that's causing you to feel whatever you don't like, get it out. Stomp your feet, move, dance to Michael Jackson, jump up and down. Whatever it is, you can change how you feel with movement.
Oh, you're so right. You're so right. Well, you mentioned just earlier about Alan Ting and the podcast, and I'll have a link for that in the show notes. So if people want to go and find out more about sleep deprivation in more detail from your website. But clearly you are a podcaster too, and you have lots of shows that you've been doing recently. What podcast sticks out to you the most that you would love to share?
Let me see. So one of the podcasts that I think is one of my favorites that I've done is called How to Cut Family Drama.
Okay.
Because I did this right around the holidays, because it really, and it's focused a little bit on the holidays because everyone's coming together.
Yes.
But the tenets that she teaches, and it's a relationship expert named Summer Howard, and she rocked my world. This was a fantastic podcast about relationships, and because it comes up as moms so often. You know, we have problems with our mother-in-laws or our sister-in-law or our own parents. We get triggered by them. And she really gave some really neat perspectives on how to shift that. And I've heard people over and over again saying, oh my God, that was such a great podcast. So that one is a really good one, Cutting Family Drama.
It is one of those things, though, isn't it, that you have to make a decision about where you're going to put your energy today and decide where you're going to keep it. You know, I don't know if I'm being really clear about that, but I think about toxic friends and neighbors and family members and people that are around. You can feel really spent and overwhelmed, and they can really steal your joy. And you've got to decide how much time you rest in their company before it's really going to impact your happiness. How would you counsel somebody that has these types of people in their lives and feel that they have to kind of keep them?
So I talk a lot about people I call negative Nancys or bad news Bettys, the bad news Bettys in your life. And we all have them. They're the people that you feel like in order to connect with them and be around them, you need to complain.
Right.
They complain a lot. And so in order to bond with them, you find yourself finding things in your life to complain about.
Okay, yes.
You know, so there are always those people, and there are going to be people in your life that you can shed. So number one, I talk about really needing to take a look at the people in your life and shed the people that aren't very positive. And that sounds kind of mean, but you don't have to like drop them as friends. But if there are people in your life that are more negative and that tend to bring you down or that aren't supportive or that you feel like, you know, once you've had kids, sometimes there are people that don't have kids that are, you know, kind of weird around you or envious, or there may be people that have kids that do things differently, that there's conflict there. And, you know, you don't have to have them in your lives in a huge way. So number one, I really encourage people to look at their friend closet and, you know, donate some that don't really fit in your closet anymore. And you can just pull away. You don't have to like dump them, you know, I'm going to not Facebook friend you anymore. You don't have to do that. But really be conscious about who you spend your time with.
Yeah.
Because we have so little time, and this is one thing that hit me a ton when I had a baby, was I have so little time to connect with people now that I have to be really conscious in who I do that with and connect with people that are really empowering for me.
Yeah.
So that's one, is cleaning out your friend closet. And then there's the people that you can't really dump, the family members that are a little bit negative. And I really, when I'm around these people, I try to, this sounds kind of silly, but I learned this from an energy worker, was imagine yourself in a bubble.
Yes.
And he claims that this really works, and it feels like it works for me, but I'm in a bubble and you can't get to me. So, you know, they're over there doing their energetic thing, or they're over there complaining or they're criticizing or whatever, and I'm in my bubble. So that's one way. Another way to deal with them that another friend of mine brought up that I loved is you imagine that you're grabbing them by the neck and doing like a noogie. Like, you know, when you like put your arm around someone and like rub their head, like, oh, you're so cute.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
So say it's your dad and he starts saying this stuff that's really critical, like he always does. And you imagine yourself putting your arm around his neck and rubbing him on the head and going, oh, you're so cute with all your narcissistic ways and the way you criticize everyone around you. It's so cute. And I love that because it's like it kind of changes the energy around the person, you know. And I do think it's important when you've got someone in your life that you can't change. You're not going to change them, but you can change your perception of them. You can change how you think of them in your mind. And there's, you know, one way is to do this, is this little noogie thing, I think, kind of shifts the way you see them. And that's one way to do it. And another way is to basically tell yourself, you know what, you know, I don't know what it is that caused him to be that way. I really don't, but I know there's something in his past, something in his life that has caused him to see the world the way he does. I don't like the way he sees the world. I don't need to see the world the way he does, you know, but I can have compassion for him. And it's hard to have compassion a lot for people that are difficult for you, and that are especially the people that are critical. But if you can find some way to look at them with some compassion, that shifts everything. I mean, that's how you let go of resentment. That's how you let go of anger, is you find a way to see the situation with compassion for the other person. And I guarantee there's a way to do it. You just haven't found it yet. It may take you a while to figure it out and to find it. You know, it is how you can see them a different way. But when you find it and you can let go of caring what they think about the world, caring what they think about you, you know, like, you know what, you see the world that way. I don't agree. If you want to criticize me, fine, whatever. I know that you were criticized as a kid and I feel for you, you know, and let it go. Mm-hmm. So that really, that the idea of compassion, and I study Mary Morrissey a lot. She's my like favorite person in the guru world. that's who I learned that concept from. And that changed my entire life, is the concept of forgiveness and compassion.
Oh, no, that's really good, because I think it can be really difficult sometimes to move past a situation, especially if you have to return to it frequently. And, you know, you've got the children now and you want to have a good relationship, but it can sometimes be onerous. You can see that it's coming and you just start to get overwhelmed of all of these things. It's going to happen this way. I know this behavior is going to happen. And you kind of get overwhelmed with all of it. So I love those tips that you just shared about how we can minimize that and actually change our mindset and do something different, because it comes down to how we deal with things as well.
Yeah, and that's what Mary Morrissey says. Forgiveness is really nothing but changing the way you see the other person. It has nothing to do with the other person at all. You don't have to tell them you forgive them, nothing. All it is you change the way you see them and you see the situation, and you free yourself from whatever it is you're holding on to, anger, resentment. And so if you have someone in your life that whenever you think about them, you kind of like have a fight with them in your head, or you start like imagining like, well, I hope they, you know, stub their toe, or, and like, you know, all have those people. And I went, when I listened to, she has a program, Mary Morrissey, that I listened to, and she kind of has a part where you go through and find these people and you work on letting go. And that really changed everything for me. And it takes time. It's not overnight. But when I really, especially the people that are like little, you know, the big ones are hard. They take months and months and months, if not years, to work through. But the little ones, the people that just, you have a little fight in your head with them all the time, when you can let go of those, you're like, God, I'm so much freer. I feel so much happier that I'm not having this fight in my head with her whenever I think of her.
Yes, it's amazing. It's amazing. Thank you. Yeah, it makes total sense to be able to do something like that. So that's really cool. You mentioned earlier about when you're alone and you're at home, and I think that really is something that happens to so many of us. We come back from work and maybe we're home for a year or two or a few months, and the landscape is completely different to the world of work that we were in. Maybe we're home with the kids for a little while or permanently. And I also think of people that have moved, and there's lots of us that move regularly to different cities. I mean, we're a military family, so we do all the time, but there's lots of, you know, families move, and now you have to make new friends and be able to introduce yourself to new people and find new people. So when you've moved to these new places, how do you start to make the right types of friends that will support the happiness practices that you want to do without kind of picking up the negative Nellies and the, oh, what Betsy
Bad
did
news
you say?
Betty.
I forgot what was that. Bad news, Betty. You know, how do you find those right types of people?
Actually, this is a question that I've been asking myself, because when I became a mother, I thought, oh, I'll just meet other moms. It'll be easy. And it's really not. It's really not. It's really hard. And I talk to anybody. You know, I meet moms. I'll come home and be like, I just met a mom at Safeway. My husband's like, how did you meet a mom at Safeway? I'm like, I don't know. We just started talking, you know. But I actually did a podcast on this exact topic. I went and found a friend of mine who's also an expert at teaching men how to pick up women.
Oh.
So he teaches men, it's more than pick up, it's really he teaches them how to, you know, connect deeply with women, but, you know, he also teaches them how to meet them. And so I went to him, and he's a parent as well, so he really liked the mission. And so I said, can you help me, can you brainstorm with me how moms can do this? When you meet a mom at, you know, you meet her at, whether it's the grocery store or you have kids in a playgroup together, how do you go from, hi, we have kids the same age, to, okay, we're friends? And he has some good, you know, some good tips in that podcast. That'll be a good one. It's called How to Pick Up Mommy Friends and Deepen Relationships. That's a good podcast to listen to. But what's actually worked the best for me, besides just talking to every mom that will listen to me? And I'm surprised, because a lot of them actually don't want to talk to me. And it's like, I thought that people would be more, I don't know, but it's like, I'd say fewer than not are not super interested in having conversation, but I don't get deterred. I'm like, okay, next. You know, so I talk to any mom wherever we are. If I see a mom in line at Starbucks with me, I start talking to her, you know? And so that's one way, because occasionally I have met a few friends that way. Mm-hmm. But I've also joined, it seemed a little bit, to me, it seemed kind of forced, the play groups and stuff. It's like speed dating, you know, we should be friends, but we have kids the same age.
Yes.
And that seems a little forced, and sometimes that could work. But what's really helped me is joining things that I, in my community, that I enjoy. So I have been trying to get active in just things that I enjoy and meeting people organically that way. So I joined a choir because I love to sing, and I joined, it's a choir in my community of just, you know, women that sing together. And I've made a couple of really good friendships there, are people that have common interests, and one of them has kids and one of them doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to be. And I kind of felt like, well, now that I'm a mom, I need mommy friends. And yes, I mean, you do, but you also need friends that you have common interests with. And I think that's the hardest part about some of the forced mommy groups, is that just because we have kids the same age doesn't mean we have anything whatsoever in common.
Right.
So I found that I actually was better off just looking for things that I enjoy and trying to meet people that have common interests in that way. And also, I'm very picky with the people that I spend time with. So when I meet people, and every time I see them in practice, you know, they're talking about how bad their day was every single time, I'm like, oh, bad news Betty. No, you know, right. I'm not going to spend time with bad news Betty. So I just identify them, you know, and when there's some people that every time I see them, they have a smile on their face and they're like, hi, how are you? I'm like, that's the person I need to be friends with. So I target people, you know, and this is all in my own head. I'm saying this out loud now, but mm-hmm, I do. Like, I'm like, oh, that person is someone. And you can tell by people's energy. You really can. Mm-hmm. When you really look in a room of people and you're like, who has like a big energy? Who looks like they're just happy with their life? That's the person that I try to target and try to be friends with, you know, and sometimes it works. Sometimes we can bond and be friends, and sometimes we don't, you know, sometimes it takes a little while. I'm like, I'm going to be friends with that person, and I'm going to ask them out to coffee, and I'm just, it's kind of like dating, you know? It's like, I'm going to target that person, and I'm going to try to be friends, and sometimes it doesn't work. But I think you have to look at it with kind of like find your own strategy.
Yes.
You know, you can't expect it to organically happen. And, you know, you also have to actually go do things with people. And that is very hard with moms, because we tend to cancel a lot. And, yes. And it happens. Your kid gets sick, or you know, misses a nap. And so I'd say there's only about a 60% show up rate, actually, of people with kids, and it's not their fault. But you do have to make an effort to not be a flake.
Right.
Just, you know, because when you flake on people a couple times, the friendship's going to die.
Right, yeah.
So you've got to show up. And if you have to flake a few times, that's fine, but keep making the effort. And a lot of times with friendships, I'm the one who's always like, Hey, let's get together. Even if it took, like, you know, we haven't gotten together in 6 months because we've had to cancel every time, I'm going to still keep trying. You know, I'm the person stuck to you, you know, we're going to be friends.
Yes.
You know, so that's the way I do it. But I think you have to find your own strategy, but that's the way I do it.
Would you say that it's really important to choose the right type of friends for your mental state? Mm-hmm. Because if you are at home a lot with the children, or even, it doesn't matter whether you're at home a lot, just in motherhood in general, you know, you are who your friends are. So would you say that choosing friends is really important, and learning how to drop kindly friends that aren't supporting you is a good thing?
I do. I also think that really spending time and energy on connecting with people is also very valuable. And I think in this day and age with social media, and don't get me wrong, I love that we can all connect far away, but a lot of times we end up substituting social media for real connection, and we need real connection in our lives. We need to talk to each other on the phone. We need to see each other in person. So I also think if you feel lonely and you look at and you go, well, I have all these Facebook friends and I'm IMing with people and I'm seeing their kids, pictures of their kids and all this, that is not real connection. And so you have to also make the effort. And you're going to have to be the one that makes the effort, because I feel like a lot of people have gotten very complacent about this, is you don't talk on the phone anymore, you just text, you know? And,
right,
and
yes.
It's hard to get together because we both have kids, but I see pictures of your kids all day on Facebook, so I feel like we're connected. And yes, right. We are, but there's something inherent, I think, in humans that we need real, true, deep connection that is found in let's talk on the phone and hear your voice and hear what you're going through. And let's meet in person. I want to see the joy on your face. I want to, you know, help wipe your tears. I want to, you know, because we're moving away from that. I really believe that. And we have to fight for it. You know, you have to kind of be the one in your friend circle. It's like, I'm going to call you.
Yes.
You know, even if we've never talked. I have friends I've never talked to on the phone. We've only texted.
Yeah, I think same.
It's commonplace. So you kind of have to be the one that's going to be the outsider in that. But when you do make the effort to connect and see people in person more often, you're going to feel less lonely and feel more connected. So it's not about the number of friends at all. You know, you can have two close friends that you see regularly and feel totally fulfilled. It's really about the quality of the connection you have with those people that's going to fill your soul and help you feel more supported and connected to your community.
You're so right. I was thinking about how I've been a mother for over 11 years now and how much it's changed with social media.
Because
my first child was almost before social media. I'm sure it was there, but I wasn't dabbling in it at all right to this stage now. And I remember at the weekend, I could ask girlfriends, like, let's go out and do something together, even if it's for half an hour, 20 minutes. And their partners and their husbands would stay home with the kids so that we could just kind of kick our heels up. It was our weekend too. And I think to today, and all of my friends and the people that I know find it very, very difficult. They just say, you know, the weekends, it's the only time I get to spend with my, you know, partner and my husband. They find it very difficult to carve out that little time at the weekend that we used to have. And I just feel that I feel so sad by that, because it was so nice to have a time that wasn't just during the week when we had the kids and we could all meet up, which was great, but we could actually just be ourselves as women and sisters and friends and, you know, kick back our heels and have fun.
It's hard. And so it puts it on us that I think if we're the ones that have to make more effort.
Yes.
You know, if you want it, you have to go after it, and it's harder. I do. It's easier in some aspects because we have more of an options of connection. We can meet people easier online, but we have to make more effort with the people in our lives because it's so easy to get complacent and substitute information about people. Like, okay, yes, I see pictures of your son climbing on the table, or I see a picture of, you know, this or that, with connecting with them. You know, that's information about them. Those are cute pictures. But that's not connecting with you, you know, so you just have to make more effort. And it is hard. And there, it may be that there are fewer people that are willing to go that direction with you and, you know, and do it. But maybe it just means we've got to find new friends. And
I know.
Many times with my husband, is like, people keep flaking on us. And I'm like, I get so annoyed. I'm like, stop flaking on me. Like, I got to get more friends, you know? So I kind of go at it with this fever, you know, like, we're going to do this. And my husband's like, oh my God, seriously. But I'm like, I'm lonely. I need mommy friends.
Well, it's so important, I think, for our happiness to be able to have a variety of people around us. You know, people that will build us up, people that will support us, people that will hold us and hold us accountable, but just hold us when we need holding, because we're just shaking with so much emotion of what's going around. And I don't think we can truly blossom and bloom as mothers if we don't have good people around us that can do that. And if we are... since we are such a mobile society, when we do move, you know, for those people that do stay in one place, they should be reaching out to those new people that are arriving, in the same way that new people that are arriving need to reach out and make these new connections too. I really have a heart for that, because I've experienced that lonely beginning stages when you've just left all of your really good friends and you can still remember all the things that are happening. And now you're in a new, lonely, exciting place. But it's just like, wow.
Yeah, so, that does seem so hard having days to start over. I'm not one who has to move a lot, but I have one of my best friends is in the military. Her husband's in the military, and so I see it. It's rough. It's interesting. The guy that I interviewed for the How to Pick Up Mommy Friends, his name is Decker. He was a military kid. His parents moved around a ton, and he attributes a lot of his ability to connect with people quickly, and he's just a rock star at building connection in like 2 seconds.
Yes.
And he attributes a lot of that to being a military kid, to having to move from neighborhood to neighborhood and like having to meet all new friends over and over again. So that's interesting.
I know my kids are exactly like that. They're very good at doing that. So I actually learn from them this way. Well, this has been great talking, Lauren, and sharing some ideas about how we can choose happiness. You've given us lots of really cool tools that we can use.
Great. I'm glad.
I'm really glad that you could come on and talk to us. And you are also the host of the fabulous Inspiring Mama podcast. And I would really recommend that to all the mums and dads out there. It's not just for mums. It's a great listen for dads. And it's one of those things that it's short. They're not really, really long shows. So you can listen to them on your commute. And I've been sharing them with my husband, like, oh, why don't you go and listen to this?
And oh, yay, I'm glad. Yeah, I try to keep them. I some of them are geared toward moms, but I'd say 90% of them are geared toward really anybody. And yes. I try to put some short ones on there that are like under 10 minutes. And then I put some longer ones on there if you're, you know, into listening to the longer ones. So I'm glad you're enjoying it, though. Thank you.
Oh, no, it's been great. Well, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm happy to be back. I can't believe it's the end of April already. My mum came to visit from England for 6 weeks. So we all took the opportunity to spend as much time as we could with her. It was a really good time for the boys to spend some time with grandma, and it was great just being around mum again. My mum is really, really good with plants. Every spring, I always want to do some planting. I just love to plant. I get all excited about planting, but not many of the things that I plant really survive or thrive, but we have a lot of fun doing it. I've talked about it a lot of times on the blog over at playactivities.com about our planting exploits, and we really like to do it. Well, this past year, we couldn't get to plant as we were moving, and when we arrived here in Georgia in August, it was just the wrong time to plant. Totally different climate, so I had no idea what I was going to be planting or what to do, so we did wait a little while to be able to do some planting. And in the end, I did plant some winter vegetables, and actually some of them did survive, and we got some carrots and all sorts of things that came up in the garden towards the end of the year. So it was, you know, successful, as success goes. So this time I was so excited that Mum was coming at just the right time in the beginning of March, when there was time to be able to find the right things, go to the right people, find out what grows here and plant. Because of course, that the master planter was actually going to be here, and she could plant with me and she could plant with the kids. And, you know, maybe some of the magic would rub off. We spent a really long amount of time trying to decide how we were going to plant, because we've got planters outside. And we weren't planting inside the garden, but we had lots of planters that we wanted to fill. So that took a little time. And we wanted some vegetables and we wanted some herbs. And we settled on 2 or 3 different types of tomatoes, because we're big fans of tomatoes in everything. Cooking tomatoes, as well as salsa and all sorts of things. And so the boys love tomatoes too. And I figured we'd get some strange colored ones that they're not used to, as well as some ones that we can use in cooking. We like lots of different herbs in cooking too, so I figured that wouldn't do us any harm to get some of those. We got some sage to try. I've only ever eaten sage when it's been cooked for me and when I've gone out, and so we wanted to try and see what sage would be like. So we were really excited to get all of these things, gathered them all together, got the compost, found the flowers. My mum made some hanging baskets from what she could find, because of course even she was having difficulties finding the right things, because completely different climate to England. Now we're in Georgia, trying to find the flowers that would hang and different names for the same flowers. We had a good time finding all of those things, and we planted everything and watered diligently. And then one morning, you can guess what happened. We didn't check the forecast the night before, and there was a frost. And so we lost some of the lavender that we had out front that would be smelling nice, which made me really sad because I like the smell of lavender. And then we also lost some basil and all of the tomato plants and the aubergines and a few other plants as well. So we were so, so sad. And we talked to a few friends about it, because we were showing, like, look what we're planting. We were so excited. And they said, oh, you should have waited maybe 1 week more. Apparently frost, you can still get frost up to the beginning of April here. And we planted about 5 days before the beginning of April. Who would have guessed it? So anyway, that was one of our funny stories for the things that happened. So even my mum was completely surprised by the frost, because we'd had some really, really warm days leading up to it. And then pow, as frost can do, it took it all out. So that was a rather interesting experience that we had. But it was just cool that mum was about, and that we were able to spend some time together just chatting,
talking about parenting, talking about life, and just really visiting and having the opportunity to just visit and spend time with her. That's been really cool. This will be the first year that we're going to have a really long summer holiday. Usually in England, we've been used to having 5 or so weeks, nearly 6 weeks of holiday. But this time, since we're in the States, we are having holiday from the end of May all the way through to the middle of August. And I've never had that huge amount of time since, I don't know, leaving university. And so having the kids, I've got to find what we're going to do for the summer to keep ourselves busy. Well, I'm starting to think about all of those things. Are you? I know lots of you are in the exact same position, trying to think of what you're going to do with the kids. I want it to be simple and I want it to be slow. And we have to plan for that. Otherwise, before you know it, all of these ideas will start to take over and you'll be doing lots and lots of things and get super, super busy. So right now we're just writing lists and thinking about what we would like to do for summer. I have a podcast about summer and the things that we can do during summer. So check out the show notes for that one too, so that you can look for some ideas if you are thinking about how to have a simple and slow summer holiday. Well, one thing I talked about at the very beginning was how we can have a simple and slow summer with our kids and keep our sanity. A few years ago, I started the 31-day photo challenge for kids. I'm going to do that again this year, and we're going to do it in July. Now, this is a special photo challenge. A lot of the photo challenges that you see about are challenges for us as parents and adults to do, but this one is for your kids. I don't know about your kids, but my kids love to use my phone. They grab it, take pictures of all sorts of things, and I love their perspective because it's at their height and the things that they look at. And every month when I upload all the pictures to the computer so that, and I look through them, I often catch sight of these other pictures that they've taken and I've forgotten that they took, or they just took my camera and used at some point. I thought it was kind of cool to actually put that together and say, you know what, kids, why don't you spend one day for 31 days taking a picture of certain things and we will see those things. So this is what how it works. I have 31-day photo challenge for kids this July. Starts on July the 1st, and for 31 days they will use prompts, and I have 31 prompts, and you look at the prompt and take a picture, and that's it. Now, there's many ways that you can join in. You can do it offline, meaning you don't have to send your pictures anywhere. This can be something just fun for you and your family. You can just keep it on your phone and you can share it. It's worked particularly well because I have 3 boys. So they all take pictures, and it's amazing. They do it at different times. And when you look at all 3 pictures that they've taken, they're very different perspectives and very different things. You can share it with friends offline, work together and do that. You can also come online and do it. Now, the prompts, I've tried to do the prompts so that it doesn't mean that you have to take pictures with the kids showing their faces and doing things. I know lots of people are sensitive to that. It's pictures of things that are in their neighborhood, in their area, and you can decide how they take the pictures for safety reasons, and you can decide what pictures they share, if any at all. I would encourage you to come on to a place like Instagram and share, and I'm using the hashtag 31 days in July. That's 31DAYSINJULY. And that way I can see your pictures, so you can tag me. Like I said, you don't have to do this online. You can just share that, yes, what you're doing, and I'll be excited to hear how things are going. So that's a 31-day photo challenge for kids, and it starts on July the 1st. Now, to know more about the information that I've just talked about, then you can go to raisingplayfultots.com/31photo challenge. 31 photo challenge. That's 31 photo challenge. And that will get you to the page that reminds you all about it. And it gives you the prompt. Now, the prompts, all 31, is on a PDF so that you can just, no, not a PDF, a JPEG. So it's just a picture, a graphic, and you can download that, and that will get you started. In March, I went to a homeschooling convention in Greenville, South Carolina, and it was way cool to be able to go to that. There were lots of really good speakers and authors. I was just so full up of information. It was great. I was excited to meet the lovely Sarah from Amongst Lovely Things, and I got to hear Michael Gurion speak, who I've wanted to hear speak for a long time. I've read lots of his books. I wasn't the only non-homeschooling mum there, and I spent a lovely long time looking through the homeschooling resources in the Great Hall. Lots of really good ideas about how you can have a simple, slow parenting style when you look at all the homeschooling resources through that lens. I've been listening and reading a lot of these people that I went to hear for a long time, but actually going to see them speak or having the opportunity to actually meet them was a real, real joy. So I would encourage you to look out for your favorite authors when they come nearby you and go and see them. I don't think you'll regret it at all. Next week, I'm excited to be going to Mum Summit in Arizona. I went to the homeschooling convention with friends, and that was the first time I've been to a conference where I went with a group of people. And so that was a totally new experience for me. And I think I'm kind of spoiled because I really liked it. I'm used to going by myself and meeting people there, and that's a lot harder. And this is what I'm doing again this time for Mum Summit. And I'm really looking forward to actually meeting lots of new people and people that are talking about similar things to what I'm talking about. So I can't wait to come back and share with you what was going on there. I know it'll be a great experience. I just ordered my phone battery charger as I ran out of power, phone power, just as I wanted to snap some pictures the last time. And I've also got a new water bottle to keep me going and keep me hydrated. So there's little tips that you pick up after you've been to a conference or two that you think, okay, next time it's going to be better. So I'm really excited about that. So if you're going to be over at Mum Summit, then don't forget to say hi, and I'd love to see you. Over on the Play Activities blog, I'm sharing part 4 of how to have peaceful solutions to minimize family strife and our foaming soap recipe. Visit raisingplayfultots.com/171 for all the links that I've talked about in today's show. And you can leave a comment about the show, or if you just want to leave a message for me while you're on the site, you can do that too. I'm so excited that you are here today. And I know that there are many things that you could be doing right now. And I'm glad that you've chosen to just be here, to stop and pause and make some time for your simple, slow, playful parenting lifestyle. I hope something that has been said has triggered you to investigate something more and helped you make a decision for your wonderful family. If you've enjoyed this show or any of the shows that we've done, please consider giving a rating or review on Stitcher or iTunes. I'd really appreciate that. There's a full archive of shows at raisingplayfultots.com/shows. If you want to get the fortnightly Raising Playful Tots note that has some encouragement and ideas on our journey of intentional simple parenting and simple play, then head on over to raisingplayfultots.com/fuzzy slippers so you can join the community and get nice and comfy in this space. Right now, lots of you have asked about how to start having a simple and slower family life. You like the ideas that we're talking about, but you want to step back a few steps and actually start. How did we get started? And I'm sharing my top tips in a free ebook called On the Road to Slow and Simple Parenting. So just head on over to the blog and go to raisingplayfultots.com/fuzzy slippers. That's FUZZY SLIPPERS. Fuzzy slippers, because I like fuzzy slippers. They're soft and comfortable. So I will see you again next time. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 171. Woohoo! Come over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play and intentional parenting. Join with me each week as we share, learn, and laugh together about making the most of creating our family haven. Goodbye. Hey, I just want to quickly jump in here and clarify. This show is show number 172. I cannot believe that I got the numbers wrong. So this show is number 172. See you next time.